Part 3, Chapter 8, The New Field of Life. A new bow has been set in the heavens, or expressed differently, a new electromagnetic field, a new field of life has been formed. This new magnetic field cannot be explained from ordinary dialectical nature. It has not been formed by this nature and does not entertain any harmonious contact with it. This new field of life embraces the entire Earth. It does not exhibit a single hole or interruption in its extension. One can say that the world and mankind are encompassed by the new field of life. The manifestation of the new field is referred to in the Bible as the returning Christ. You can compare this to a uniform atmospheric stratum. And, just as in rainy weather clouds heavy with moisture burst in torrential rain, so too the tensions which have built up in the new field of life discharge into seven focal points. These seven foci coincide with the seven schools, and a horizontal radiation then develops via these seven schools. In wide circles, a vibration from the seven schools permeates our dialectical field of existence. This horizontal radiation must be understood as a call, attraction, an awakening, and a touch. If we regard the rays of the new field as a vertical line, then this vertical line forms, as it were, a cross with the line of the horizontal working of the seven schools. So we discover that a cross is planted in the earth with irresistible power. You must not see the new magnetic field as a suddenly appearing strange phenomenon. It is not the case that it did not exist 50 or 100 years ago and now suddenly manifests itself. The prophecies of all times have constantly drawn attention to this miraculous manifestation. They proclaimed it as the return of Christ in the clouds of heaven, as the revelation of the sons of God. They spoke of a new harvest day, a new bow that must be set in the heavens, of the retreating of the night before a new morn, and in various other forms. You can discover this idea, this proclamation, everywhere, even in the yellow parchments of the ancients. You must, however, realize that all these prophets spoke neither from visions, nor from suggestions of divine mediators, nor did they employ occult methods, as that sort of prophecy rests on the prophetic gifts of dialectics. These last form a surrogate and imitation, and they can never remove themselves from speculative elements, which, as the past has taught, can cause a great deal of trouble. No, the prophets of whom we spoke, those who testified to the coming manifestation of the new magnetic field, knew what dialectical mankind could not know. They saw what the ordinary eyes of humanity could not see. These prophets gazed upon a tremendous piece of work, a piece of work in the course of construction. They knew of a process of fulfillment. They knew the essence and the purpose of this process, of this portion of labor, and they were able to state with great certainty, one day this building will be finished, then the results will reveal themselves and that which is new will be fulfilled. This prophecy is thus devoid of all speculative elements. Imagine that you witness a house being built from an invisible substance, that you know for which purpose it is being built, and that you know who the inhabitants of that house will be, while we, due to our state of being, are unfamiliar with all these facts. You begin telling us about it while we existentially know nothing, see nothing, hear nothing of it. We would then either think you a fool or a dreamer, or, if we respect you, call you a prophet of dialectical caliber. Yet what you tell us would not be a dialectical speculative prophecy, for you speak and state from reality. Just as you see these things from your reality, we do not see them from ours. From our reality, we cannot possibly see what you perceive. A prophet, as we have described him or her, is not a speculator of the future, but a witness of reality. Which reality do we mean here? This reality, the new magnetic field of which we now so emphatically speak, was once constructed over thousands of years. In the course of the aeons, at the approaching of a time of harvest, it must be animated anew, do its work, and when the harvest time has passed, it must, as it were, be drawn up again. Every spiritual school appearing in time prepares by its work, its diligence and its sacrifice, a part of that magnetic field, so that this field becomes more and more powerful, magnificent, and dynamic. In the present day of manifestation, the First Brotherhood had the greatest difficulties, for it really had to do pioneer work. In order for this work to succeed, the Brotherhood was formed from a great number of those sent forth who had earlier achieved liberation. It is the group alluded to as the Brotherhood of Shambhala. The Second Brotherhood was far better off, as it could continue to build upon the foundations laid by the First Brotherhood and could, moreover, reckon on the help of this first pioneer brotherhood. The work went on like this till more recent times, which were marked by the appearance of Egyptian, Indian, and Chinese brotherhoods, as well as the Essenes, Manichaeans, and other Gnostics, and finally by the Druids, the Cathars, the classical Rosicrucians of the 17th century, and the Rosicrucians of modern times. Each of these groups contributed something to the great work. Each of them wove part of the seamless garment of Jesus Christ. Each of them prepared and cooperated with the great magnetic field. Now, if you understand something of this reality, are you then a medium or an astrologer? Have so-called initiates then suggested something to you? Are you then a prophet in the negative sense? Or do you bear witness from your own scientific certainty? When you see the seamless garment being woven, when you observe a new magnetic purity gradually spreading its glory over the world, and when you perceive that its dynamic powers are constantly increasing, is it then negatively prophetic to say, there will come a day when the results will reveal themselves and make themselves apparent? When this day and that hour will be, nobody knows, so says the Bible, for there are always factors yet to be born. But he who understands, the seer, has this certainty. This glorious day will come. So if you can accept these conclusions, you are placing yourself on the ground of a scientific reality. It is therefore not prophetic speculation when the Confessio Fraternitatis says, "One thing, O mortals, is established here by us, namely, that God has decided that before its end, the world will be presented with a stream of truth, light, and greatness, such as he ordained, that should accompany Adam in paradise." And when von Eckartshausen repeatedly spoke of the re-erection of the building in the early 19th century, he spoke from very deep inner knowledge. He testified out of the revelation of the sons of God, out of the revelation of the Holy Spirit. He saw the magnetic field in development and knew that this field touched him, that he was a part of it. Each of us can now attain this same knowledge, for the field of radiation which the ancient prophets mention surrounds us all as a seamless garment. It has now become so powerful, the glow of the new era so intense, that when you open your microcosm to this touch, you immediately notice and experience this radiation power, and immediately you enter the essence of both natures. From that moment on, the beginning of the Holy Gospel is written for you about the relationship of John to Jesus, of the figure of John who says, "Make straight the way of the Lord for our God who is coming. I am not the Son of God, but he who comes after me, the latchet of whose shoe I, on account of my existence in the nature of death, am not worthy to loose. He who comes after me is greater than I." See, when you open your being, your microcosm, to this wondrous new field of life, then this radiation power will touch your heart atom, set your whole being aglow, and lead you into a new process, a process of transmutation and transfiguration. From that moment on, we said, you stand in the being of both natures, the one nature which diminishes with John the Baptist, the other nature which grows the nature of the new man. When you enter into this stage, this process of the two natures, a variety of functions immediately arises within you, as Paul puts it in his first letter to the Corinthians, namely, a new working of powers which develops the new faculties, new faculties in dialectical man who diminishes, and new faculties in and through man who is to be born. Consequently, the candidate then also participates in a new series of services, a new series of activities. When this power touches him and a process commences within him, its results will become apparent in and through his actions. These new activities render the new, seamless garment untearable. They will gather in the new harvest. Imagine that a group of people is positively touched by the new magnetic field, and that the functions and activities develop in them and begin to become manifest. They instantly form a gigantic transformer station, as it were, for new magnetic powers. The power of Christ will reveal itself through them. It will radiate far and wide and encircle the earth. In this way, many seekers will be reached and helped. It will gather a new harvest and lift it into the new field of life. Paul mentions 9 different activities or services, 6 of which we have already discussed. Each state of service, each activity, is likewise a collaboration in the new edifice of God, the new magnetic field. We repeat so that you never forget that when the power of the new magnetic field touches us, the various activities will reveal themselves through us. Thus, these activities are not explicable from one dialectical power or another. One cannot learn them at a university through teaching, books, or studying. No, when they reveal themselves, they come directly from the intercosmic, all-embracing new magnetic field. Then, it is the brotherhood of Christ which testifies through us. As soon as one of the 9 activities proves itself through us, we are, in an exclusive sense, co-workers of God. Then we may work on the new edifice of God, the new magnetic field. This is what the ancient Rosicrucians in the Fama Fraternitatis called building the new house Sancti Spiritus. When Christian Rosicross spontaneously offered all his gifts, everything he possessed, to the wise and learned in Europe, they shamefully turned him away. Even though they recognized the value of what he offered, they likewise discovered that they would have to descend from their lofty thrones if they wished to serve the brotherhood of Christ. He withdrew, as the Fama Fraternitatis states, and with his brothers built the house Sancti Spiritus. He absorbed himself in a new labor of Freemasonry. This labor is the partaking in the shedding of Christ's blood, in his death and resurrection. A person who lives, works, and acts, consumes power, blood power. Each person sheds blood daily for himself, for his family, or for others. As long as this process operates within and is entirely of this nature, such bloodshed, such dying is of course never liberating. As soon as a person enters into the essence of the two natures, however, and gains a share in the other magnetic field, itai, the brotherhood of Christ, his activity produces an entirely new result. Since his work is to be explained from the new nature, such a worker will also shed his blood in a totally different way. The bloodshed of the old nature keeps the wheel of dialectics turning. It is continuous death, but the bloodshed of the new nature brings liberation. Everything you do from this new nature, however small it might be, has a directly liberating effect. 5 minutes of service to the universal brotherhood, in and through its power, are worth gold and mean more than many years of dialectical toil. The bloodshed of the old nature encourages the rotation of the wheel, while the bloodshed of the new nature yields liberation. The bloodshed of the old nature keeps others bound to the turning of the wheel as well, and also keeps others imprisoned in the nature of death. Bloodshed, in and through the new nature, urges others to liberation. because such labor, undertaken from the new nature, always collaborates in the building of the new field of life, the House Sancti Spiritus. And this house will become so powerful, the call emanating from it so irresistible, that it compels others to enter, to rise out of the nature of death. For this reason, bloodshed from the new nature, as regards any single person, actually only takes place once. Whoever is seized by this power and surrenders completely to it will enter liberation,